Marty. Joining us now is a former tight end out of UCLA before taking your talents to the NFL, where you broke rookie tight end records on a drizzly Tuesday before ESPN even started. And since then, you've become somewhat of a master of breathing, which we'll go into a little bit later, but it's also taken you all around the world. You're number 80 for the Detroit Lions, the biggest Joe that we know. Joe Fourier, how are you, mate?
Good, brother. Thanks for having me, Tom. I appreciate you.
Nah, mate. Welcome to Melbourne. Have you been to Melbourne before?
Only in the airport, just for a layover.
Yeah, good. We have good airports.
It's a nice airport. Nice airport. But the outside is even better.
Yeah,
good. It's been a really nice week here so far, and I feel very lucky. Been on a few pods, got in a few breathwork classes, but been received with open arms and a few fuck-offs.
Which is a good thing.
I realize that. The first thing I was like, oh, shit, where the fuck am I? But it's been real. It's been good.
A question that I like to start with, but the boys always give me a bit of shit with, is just someone that you would like, or three people that you'd like to have dinner with at a party. But because you've travelled so much, I want to know the best place in the world to have a dinner party. Not necessarily the people, but going through your socials, you've been and seen some incredible things. What's the best place to eat?
Oh, man, I mean, I appreciate the eat element that you're adding into this, besides just asking me what's my favorite place, because they all have their own thing. Mm. It's all, and also, by the way, it's just always about the people.
Yeah,
something about the love being put into the food that you feel, like the type of thing where, like, the grandma's around the corner looking and seeing if you're enjoying it, or the cook, or the restaurant owner, or whatever. So I got that the most in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of it's also in my blood. Obviously, you saw my Fourier, the last name that is Italian, but...
I did say that right, though, yeah.
Yeah, you said it great. You said it great.
Boy. That was when you were arrested 100 times.
The practice turned out good, and you worked out. It was good.
Now. So, Italy, whereabouts in Italy?
Oh, man. I mean, I was just in... I mean, Florence was great. And then Rome. Actually, I only say Rome because of recently I went to a place actually here. Not here. In Sydney. And it was... Sorry. And a guy that came straight from Rome. But he was, you know, he was repping Rome really hard. And it just so happened that he was in Sydney. But his restaurant was fantastic. It tasted like I was just in Rome again. It was awesome. So, food definitely... And if not, if an honorary mention is actually Morocco. Mm-hmm. Morocco had, like, spices and flavors that were in my mouth that I just never knew were existed. Ooh. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Yeah.
I've never been.
It's a hot place. I have been. It's. I don't think the whole time we were there, it didn't drop below 40, which was
It was hot. And you're in a desert. And then you also, you're in a desert. In 40-degree weather, and you see mountains in the distance that have snow on them.
Snow on them.
Wild. Yes.
Mm.
And camels.
Eating spicy food.
Eating spicy food.
It helps you cool down.
Yeah. So you're a Cali boy, originally born and raised in Cali. You had a bit of football. You know we call it footy here. You had a bit of pedigree in the family. You had uncle that played at the Patriots, won a Super Bowl. Yes.
Two.
All right. So the pedigree's there. At high school, you're a three-sport athlete, football, volleyball, basketball. Was it always going towards football for you, just like having the roots in the family and all that sort of thing? Or did you kind of toss up a bit of volleyball, b-ball stuff? Because you've got a great basketball story.
Yeah. I have a few good ones, but especially the pedigree in my family was almost – this sport of football was kind of thrust upon me. Mm. It was always in my immediate environment, you know, in America, especially in my home. Sundays were holidays during fall, our fall.
Yep.
And it wasn't just my uncle that won two Super Bowls. He was actually the youngest of four, the youngest of three boys that also played, all of my mom, my three uncles, they all played sports in college.
Yeah.
My mom played basketball. All three of the boys played college football. The first one went to University of Washington, was a Husky, played college football there, tight end. Second one went to Northern Arizona, played fullback. And then we have my uncle played in Colorado, 13 seasons in the NFL, two Super Bowls, incredible career, tight end. Then his son is right now, he just transferred from Colorado to play he's probably going to transfer. He's transferring right now to a different college in the middle of it in the portal. But he, tight end. And then, yeah, it's just been in our family. Even my grandfather played football. And then myself, I got to play. But I also had really, like, I just loved sports. It gave me brotherhood. It gave me discipline. It gave sports give you so much. If I could tell right away if someone never touched any sort of pitch or any sort of field or any sort of court, because most often than not, even if you're creative like that, I think that gives you so much, and I can kind of tell almost like a we're not gonna have much in common. but yeah, I actually played football, basketball, and volleyball all in high school, and when I started getting my sophomore and junior year, I was actually getting recruited for all of them. I got offers to play college for all three of them. That was pretty cool. I did tell the volleyball schools to like chill, like you don't.
Cool.
Yeah,
probably
not. Yeah, like nah, there's no future in that. But thank you.
Yeah,
that's a nice gesture. Nice. Yeah. Nice of you. And then basketball, it was cool to receive that, but also it was one of those things where my coach at the time was just like, hey, this is here if you want it. And then I actually had one conversation with the head coach at UCLA, Ben Howland, at the time. And we had a quick couple conversations about maybe playing at UCLA. But the one time it was going to potentially happen, we had a late bowl game. I had an ankle injury, and it just didn't make sense. But, yeah, that was my relationship with the sports.
Yeah. And obviously ended up at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. What was, like, their recruiting kind of, I suppose, tactics that made them stand at massive school? Pretty prestigious. I think, was it your grandfather had some history with Notre Dame?
He just loved the movie Rudy.
Okay.
I was a little sponge because him and my grandmother and my mom raised me.
Yeah.
So he would always get me at a very young age. He's like, Joseph, he's from Louisiana. So, Joseph, you know, you got to go to Notre Dame. All three of my sons, they didn't go to Notre Dame. They had the chance to, but they didn't go to Notre Dame. You got to go to Notre Dame. So I went to Notre Dame because... basically, my grandfather always wanted me to, so it was one of those things that was instilled upon me. But they actually did shit to recruit me. As soon as I got a taste that they wanted me to come down there, I was like, okay, coming.
Yeah.
This is the dream. Like, I just had to go visit
your way sideways.
Like, the type of thing where my grandfather, I think I've only seen him cry, like, a few times in my life, and one of the times was when I, like, decided I was going to go there.
Yeah.
And he was like, it was... he was proud. So that was a cool feeling. But yeah, the connection was that Charlie Weiss was the coach. And I had met him a few years prior at the Super Bowl when he was the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots coaching my uncle Christian. So it was always like written in the stars. Like I, 14 years old, like I remember one of my first letters was from Notre Dame. I remember he handed me one of his business cards before he was the coach there. Like, so it was always kind of written in the stars. So when it came down to it, I visited them for junior day during my senior year, and it was during basketball season. So I had to miss a game. I went there during my birthday time. I didn't bring a jacket. It was fucking freezing. Yeah. And coming from L.A., that was like my first real experience. Like, I'd been in the snow here and there, but like, that Midwest cold, oh, it burns. Like, your nose hairs freeze. And even after that, I was like, I'm coming. Let's do this. Like, you know? But yeah, thereafter, Notre Dame was a dream come true, and it was great. It was short-lived, but it was great.
Do you want to go into why it was short-lived?
Why was it short-lived? Well, shit. Buckle up. Yeah, I don't know if you guys know the setup at Notre Dame, but it's... all the dormitories on campus, which, like, you have to live on campus most of the time that while you're there. They're all one gender. So you have girls' dorms, boys' dorms, and then you have a house mom that watches over all the girls in there. And then you have your RAs, but you have the resident director, which is like a priest in each dorm. So St. Edward's Hall, one of the oldest dorms on campus, and right next to the Golden Dome, super cool, a lot of history. The priest that was in the dorm, we had a cool relationship. He would like play Halo with the guys in the dorm and stuff like that. And, you know, we were pretty cool. We had a good rapport. And then fast forward to the end of spring, I'm playing the spring game. And then after the spring game, got to have a good time. So I have my red solo cup in hand, ready to go through the dorms, check out what's going on with the girlies across the halls, you know, that type of thing. And before I even have a chance to have any sort of drink, any sort of sip of anything, I see the priest walking through the halls. And he comes up to me, and he has these little these glasses on. He's about yay high. He's about Tom's height.
He's about Tom's height.
No, I think he got him by like a half an inch. And so meanwhile, we're talking real quick. He says, "Hey, I heard you had a good game. Be safe tonight." And after that, there was a group of people nearby, so they might have seen this, which he probably didn't appreciate the audience. But after that, I gave him a slap on the tush. A nice little good game. And
sportsmanship.
Brotherhood. Not to him. He did not like it. So he turned around and he started cursing at me. He said, "You don't put your fucking hands on me." And I'm like, I'm 19 years old. I'd be slapping butts. Yeah. And I'd never had this reaction before. So in that moment, all the color left my face. And I'm like, oh, shit. It was an out-of-body experience. Like, I've never had this reaction before. Mm. Are you good? Like, what did I do
what
wrong?
What just happened?
Like, so I didn't even really register. I actually really enjoyed my night thereafter. I was like, oh, that was kind of weird. Mm. But lo and behold, 2 days later, I get a manila envelope under my dorm room door, the first thing in the morning. I open it up, and it's like, "You, Joseph Fourier, hereby have been charged with physical violence and sexual harassment." I said, "What?" So he
talk
said
about
he,
the fucking anxiety going. Yeah,
right, and you know, it was a hard lesson to receive, but it was my first lesson with like my intention and versus someone else's perception. I don't know his experience, and also I'm off the pitch. I gotta be careful with whose butt I slap.
Yeah.
Maybe not a priest.
Yeah,
but that was my personality back then. I just was so fun-loving and outgoing that I really didn't care about the path of destruction I left behind me. You know, I was an irreverent 19-year-old.
You're bulletproof.
I'm on top of the world. My dream school, like football there, is worshipped.
Yeah.
You know, I had a good spring game. I'm on top of the world. Things are going good. But I slapped a butt.
Literally butt.
Yeah. So thereafter, they decided to suspend me the next semester, and that would have been the football season. So I would have missed all summer school, all football season. I'll never forget. I went to a junior college for 2 weeks. That was weird. Decided to leave, and then I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I was going to go back, and then I remember transferring. And that day, like, I left my phone in the car. I went to the beach, and then I came back. And this is before like real like big news was like all up in your face and TikTok and Instagram. And I got like 200 text messages, like 75 missed calls. Like everyone, like all the world was like, well, not the world, but the small market that loved the Notre Dame football.
Yeah, this little bubble
was like boom, blown up. Because it was my first experience with like really like major failure and difficulty. That kind of gave me sleepless nights, shook up my whole entire, like, oh, this is the trajectory of things. And a tough lesson, but a lesson nonetheless that I take with me now. I'm careful of whose butts I slap.
Is that why we didn't get a butt slap on the way?
You'll get one after.
And I suppose, sorry, jumping on you, Danny, like, probably a pretty crazy experience. Like, we didn't have the portal that we see now, like, within college, at NIL and all that sort of stuff. So transferring, obviously, as
transfer
you said,
was a bitch.
Big deal, yeah. Too. Like, yeah.
It sucked. Yeah, I look at it nowadays, and it's like the wild, wild west.
You're like a trailblazer.
Yeah.
You're heading up into the new frontier.
Do it my way. Do it how I did it. The way it is now, it's so much better, because the whole sitting out a year, though it benefited me, it still was difficult to have that time, even though you were already on the rise. And then, it's just
getting in that headspace.
And then you're wasting your time as well. Like, your time, but that time could be spent on the field, on the pitch, playing in games and that type of thing. But
yeah.
Because you went to UCLA and redshirted, yeah?
Yeah, so because I burned my redshirt my freshman year, I transferred and I used that year as a redshirt. But that doesn't matter anymore. You can just transfer and play right away, which is so great.
He looked at me funny. I wanted to be.
Yeah. And the NIL stuff, oh, God, I'm so happy that they get that, but there is a hint of jealousy because they were selling my jersey back at UCLA.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on the NCAA football game, like all these things. And also, like, super marketable. So, so that I totally would have had free cars and all this.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to look at it, but I'm super happy that it's happening.
Yeah. And how was your time at UCLA? Like, so now that you've actually got there and you're playing, you had like some pretty phenomenal stats over the years. How was your time there as a whole?
Like for the football or
both.
Life?
Oh, okay, both. Hey, let's go.
I'm gonna just go with both.
But as you said, super marketable.
Super marketable. UCLA was home. Mm. I'm from there. It was coming home. There was oftentimes I would just take my clothes back to my grandparents' house to get my laundry done. Like that was if I wanted a home cooked meal, I could go over the hill. But still, I had this little bubble, big spread out bubble of Los Angeles where I'd find places to go to enjoy myself in Manhattan Beach, Bel Air. Saw myself in places I probably shouldn't have been. The Playboy Mansion, hey. Random clubs, rubbing elbows with like Paris Hilton. They're like, "Who's this guy?"
Yes.
And it would be I'd be by myself. I'd travel solo. Like I know guys these days, like I see teammates of mine. They're rolling deep into these places, and I'm like, "Nah, like this is how I navigate through the world." Like that. When people like, I could name celebrities when I was 21 years old that would point at me like, "Who's this guy?" They're like, "Oh, he plays football at UCLA." Oh, come on in, it's all good.
And dude,
like,
you're not sneaking into a room.
Nah, being 6'8", but and also like my eyes were big and I'm smiling the whole time. You know, happy to be here, guys. Happy to be here.
Paris?
No, I'm not. And what are you guys smelling? Is that sugar?
There's another pretty crazy story while you're at UCLA is when you're playing SC, which is like a massive game anyway for UCLA. Do you want to go into that one?
The UCLA versus USC?
Yeah.
My senior year?
Mm-hmm.
Big game. You're talking about what happened around it?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you ask the real question? Because I can tell you, I scored a touchdown. It was awesome.
Exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. I think you're talking about the time that my father called me.
Yes.
Is that
correct.
Right? Okay. Well, yeah, you guys did your research. Nice. You listened to Joe Hawley's pod.
Great center, by the way.
This question is based from, I didn't grow up with my father. Like I mentioned, my grandfather, my grandmother, and my mother raised me. I had connections with him when I was like 5, run-ins with him when I was 5 years old. And then I didn't speak to him for 17 years. And then I get a phone call. I'm 22 years old, my senior year. It's big game versus USC versus UCLA, like literally the biggest game. It's the biggest game. And I get a phone call like a couple days before the game, and I'm like, "Hello." And he's like, "Joseph is." And I'm like, "Yep." "Who's this?" He's like, "It's Andy." And I'm like, "Okay, who's Andy?" And he's like, "It's your father." And like, again, color leaves my face. I'm like, "Whoa." Rush of energy flows through me, and I'm like, "All right, what you want? What's going on?" And he's like, "Oh, I'm coming to your game." And I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "I'd love to see you." I'm like, "No, I don't want to see you. I haven't talked to you in 17 years. I'll see you on my terms, but by all means, enjoy the game." So I didn't see him. And I didn't also speak to them thereafter for 8 years. And we won the game, scored a touchdown, got a third and 15 yard. My favorite catch of all time was third and 15, you know, to seal the game, really. I catch this pass. It's raining. I catch this pass, and I'm diving. It was like one that was behind me. Brett Hundley threw me an awesome a ball behind me just to secure it. But tough catch. Could have thrown a better ball. Probably would have scored if you threw a better ball, Brett. But I caught it, and it was epic. And I spun the ball after. It was dope. It was epic. And I felt every 80, 90,000 people, pairs of eyes looking at me. It was epic. But thereafter, 8 years later, I was trying to get my Italian citizenship. So I was going through the process. And when I told my mom I was going through the process, like, "Hey, mom, you need my birth certificate. Where's it at?" And my mom's like, "Ooh, you didn't know that your father didn't ever sign your birth certificate." I was like, "Ah, shit.
Of course."
Yeah. So I got to go meet this dude. So basically I just kind of show up at his doorstep after not seeing him for 25 years. And when I show up, really cool thing was that he was wearing a UCLA football hat. So We got to embrace each other, catch up, and do all that type of thing. The second cigarette I've ever had in my life was with my father, because he's like, "Oh, why are you doing that?" I'm like, I would like to say I've done this before, something to do together, you know. And also, there were, you know, right when he saw me, he broke down and cried in my arms. So that was cool to comfort him and stuff like that. But the story gets even deeper with the whole concept of, you know, having this moment, and then, you know, having the notary for him to sign the birth certificate. She had the same person, middle name as my mom. Her name was Julianne. My mom's name is Julianne. So it was just like this weird universe thing happening. And then he had one more football hat in the house. It was the Detroit Lions football hat. So all that was just like, it was so confirming, so beautiful. But then also, like, I asked him the cliche question, like, "Hey, where were you?" He's like, "Oh, I had another family." I'm like, "Okay, moving on. Next question. And then I got to learn about my Italian roots and stuff like that. I found out that my grandfather was in my great grandmother's belly, going through Ellis Island, immigrating to it from Italy, from Naples to New York. So that was pretty cool. Things I didn't know. But then again, I was like, okay, I'm glad you weren't a part of my life. Like, he made his bad decisions. He was locked up. He abused drugs, all this thing. Abused drugs to the very end, really, I believe, as well, because 8 months thereafter that, he died. And I actually had no idea. There was no funeral, no procession. I didn't go to anything. It just was one of those things where I got a phone call from a cousin that I barely know. James, I appreciate the call, but it was one of those things where I also knew he was... I knew the news before it was said to me. Mm. Another like universe thing. I can be really spiritual and hippie and it gets you guys weirded out. But that feeling, I was like, okay, well, I just knew. But I got my closure. I got my moment. And I had this awesome story to tell my kids and thereafter. But when I can count my interactions with my father on one hand, it's just a little piece of me, because my life was so much better around that. And thanks for the sperm donation, but besides that, my life was pretty fantastic without him. But still a fun story to have that together with him in that short moment. But thank God I shaved my mustache, because he had one too, because we would have looked like fucking twins in a very smaller package. He was tiny. My mother was taller than him. Sorry to get so deep. I thought Aussies were talking shit.
the biggest thing I got out of that story, Brett Hundley, a good Packers, so leave him alone.
Brett's my guy.
Mate, that would have been a tight spiral. Would have hit you right. can't imagine it.
Oh, I owe Brett. My senior year was largely due to Brett's success. I mean, like, one, I made his job really easy. I think I'm second all-time for touchdowns in a season, receiving touchdowns in a season, behind J.J. Stokes, if you know that name. Cool. Yeah. Look it up. You're wearing a UCLA football shirt. Yes,
Fraud.
Looking it up.
Oh, you want me actually?
I thought it was behind Mercedes Lewis.
No, I got more than Mercedes.
Ah, Roger. Another good bagger.
Let's go.
Let's be real about Mercedes Lewis. He's the greatest of all time. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I know that we can talk about Kelsey, Gronkowski, a couple other guys. I would put him as one of the best to ever do it.
Especially longevity.
Especially at always a high level. Mm. Always a high level. Mercedes, when it comes to tight ends, I would love to be in the same you know, hall of him and the best to do it that came through UCLA. So, yeah, not above Mercedes, but I hope to be in the top three. It'll be cool.
Well, as far as touchdown catches, you are above him. So.
Fuck yeah. Take that, Mercedes.
And that kind of goes into the next one where you had a... Your college career was, you know, up and to the left. It was, I'm cooking in here. I'll have one of those as well. You know, even in the second year, you got best offensive, my arms don't reach that long.
Small limbs. Look at you, you're our guest. Playing host.
So the fact that it was, you know, up and to the left kind of, did you have much?
What does that mean, up and to the left?
Just on the right. On the right.
I was like, they're talking about something else. Right now, it's down to the left.
Always to the left. So the trajectory was very much up like, and to the left. Yeah. Was there any... Did you believe you were going to the NFL? Because like, you did end up going undrafted. So was there chat? Like, did you have talk from agents and things like that?
Yeah, definitely. Even though undrafted happens, I still thought I was getting drafted. Just because you're undrafted doesn't mean, like, you have no chance of getting into the NFL. Like, up until that point, you're believing that you're getting drafted. And even then, that's not even the point of which, when it becomes a reality that you're going, is your belief. That's when your belief begins. The belief begins when you're a tyke, when you're a lad, when you're a little, what is he called? What do you guys call boys here? That's Sheila's. What's the other one?
Dudes.
We got lots of words. I don't know. You guys have weirdest
two
words.
Yeah.
Arvo, servo.
We liked it. We shortened it.
Yeah, you shortened, you shortened everything. But yeah, no, if you have any sense of making it to the NFL, you have to believe in your bones from the very, very beginning. I mean, yes, you play in the beginning and when you're younger in high school for the play of the game, you know, playing with your best friends and growing up together and that type of thing. But then eventually, like, one, I was always tall and I was always quite good no matter what level I was at. And then I also had the beauty of around my life, which was I got to see it done before. My uncle did it. Same position, too. And he did it for a long time. And he won the Super Bowl. I have kissed the Lombardi Trophy when I was a kid. Like, I did that. I saw that it was possible.
Wild.
And yeah, and see, and having that feeling, and like, around me, like, I remember it his whole career. Like, that's why I love football, because I watched him growing up. So, yes. Yeah, it was always a twinkle in my eye, and it grew more and more as I grew more and more. And eventually, when I grew more and more into my body, I always had, you know, a talent that was something to behold, something to people would recognize. And I got the recognition, and eventually you get to a certain point, you're like, yeah, like, this is happening. I remember even when I was younger, in like sixth, seventh grade primary school, one of my teachers was like, you better have a backup plan. And I was just like, no, I fucking don't. Okay. What the fuck are you talking
about?
You're
NFL, baby?
Yeah. Like, my backup plan was basketball.
Yeah.
Very worst, like, volleyball.
So I remember even like that feeling in my bones back then. So, and even then, like, I've been around young men that have asked me what it takes and if they should pursue. And I'm like, if it's a question, it's not for you. I was a kid sleeping with a football. I was asking my grandfather or my uncles or my friends, you want to play catch? 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 Like, that was me.
And so, it was so evident. As soon as you walked in this room, the first thing you did was pick up the ball.
Yeah. As much as, like, I told you, boys, as much as football is not a part of my life anymore, it's like, it's still like, I'm like drawn to it. And like, I can't watch a game as much as I don't watch games nowadays. Like, when I do watch them, it's like, it invokes so much emotion into me. Yeah. Like, I still feel it. Like, that energetical, like, release. Like, why do you see in a stadium, like, people, any stadium, but football, we're talking in this case, people throw their arms up, you know, because there's so much energy that they can't, like, contain. They got to throw it out somewhere. I mean, like, same with laughter. Like, your body's inability to contain its joy, you laugh. Your body's inability to contain excitement, you fucking stand up and scream. Like, that's why they're called fanatics, fans. Like, it's football's great. Football's great. I love it. Like, even talking about it. That's why I'm like, namaste.
Yeah.
I'm a chill.
I was getting jacked up.
So you thought you were going. Is that okay?
Yeah, I fucking believed it. I believed it from the very beginning.
Well, I saw, and not to jump in again, but there were some articles kicking around. I think you were ranked like a top seven.
Six or seven.
Yeah. Tight end prospect, like,
for
the draft in Cali, I think.
There was, out of high school.
Was that out of high school or college?
Yeah,
he was
college.
But even still, like, that all, like you were saying, that all goes into like that belief and building the hype, and like, you're starting to hear it external. Like, you believe it within yourself, then you're starting to hear external, and it's like, it just like gets that snowball.
Oh, right? Yeah, it compounds.
Yeah.
You know, when you get the recognitions from those like recruiting websites, like, you know how you hear some guys like, oh, he was like a 2-star and he still made it. Like, nah, I was like a 4-star. I love the attention. I was looking at articles, see all the message boards. I was refreshing message boards. What are they saying?
Giving you juice.
Yeah. It was cool. It was a good feeling.
So you were in as a different name. Like, nah, man, he's 4.5 at least.
Should have seen the grab he took one hit.
Yeah, like it's Kevin Durant style.
Yeah.
I've got some pre-draft measurables here.
Yeah.
6'8" and 259, which for us is just over 2 meters and 117 kegs. Are you sitting in that? Because we're pretty similar height.
I am still the same height. I take up a little less space. I don't know what it is in keys, but I am around 240. So I lost 20 pounds. I mean, I played at 265.
So you'd be over 100 kegs in. Yeah,
120
is 100. 107, 107. What age did you top out at 6'8"?
When did they get to 6'8"?
Yeah, like how, I would say how old like were
my senior year of high school or my freshman year of college. I might have been 6'7", and I probably got like a couple more inches.
You're standing over teachers from an early age.
Oh, yeah. That's why authority was kind of always silly to me. I was like, why would I listen to you? You're down there.
You're so cute, though.
Yeah. Just pat him on the head.
Yeah, we can fight that.
And then you give him the big joke.
Yeah, you guys are giving butt slaps. Tom's going to get a pat on the head.
I'm going down the MCD. I'm going to take your knee. Fucking on the way out. And 477 on the 40-yard. Can you do that anymore?
468.
Oh.
That was a top end. They have a top end and bottom, and then take the
average. Had a headwind on that one.
Yeah. You're going to do that?
No. That was 15 years ago. No, 10 years ago.
I'm quicker than I was 15 years ago.
Yeah. What were you doing? You're a video gamer.
Nah.
I don't think you are.
Yeah. But, I'm cool. Yeah, like,
pretty good numbers and like measures. It's called steroids. Like, people look. I took a lot of steroids.
Yeah. Trend.
Like good numbers on paper, like awesome prospect. You end up going undrafted, as we've talked about. Do you have like a theory why that happened? And then we'll sort of touch on how you got to the Lions and that later. But do you have a theory why ended up going undrafted? Do you think it was a bit of the stuff that went on at Notre Dame earlier? Like that plays into it?
Kind of. But then again, like, dudes be like running over people and shooting people and still go to the league. So I don't know. I mean, like, I mean, at that point, I kept myself up a few times thinking about it and mulling over it. I think there was a few factors, that being one of them. I was also like I was a niche player. Mm. Like a lot of people didn't believe in my blocking ability because in my senior year of college, I really didn't block much because I was a receiver more than a tight end because we changed our offense. Like we changed our offense every year I was at UCLA. So I never got comfortable with the playbook ever in my career. It sucked. But made the most of it.
Mm. And the most tight end catches.
Yeah.
I was never really comfortable.
Breaking records. No,
Just a natural gazelle out there.
Yeah. But that was also like this big body type of guy. So anyways, I had some things. And then also I don't know if like there were certain people that should have been behind me or certain people that should have been in my corner that... Jesus Christ, pause again. Certain people that would support me that didn't. Like certain coaches maybe that I heard musings or rumblings that I maybe had a coach or two that wasn't on my side. Mm. I don't know, but what am I going to do? I can sit here and hypothesize what happened back then. But it didn't happen. It was a dream, but it didn't happen. I remember having family over day three, hoping to hear my name in round four, five, six, or seven. And it never happened. Had a few fake outs because they call you still around round seven. Like, hey, we're thinking
they
about
you.
Yeah, they call you. I'm like, man. Hey, we're thinking about you after. I'm like, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I'm ready now. Yeah. Yeah. But actually, even at that point, like, once it's over, you actually end up doing the choosing. So you actually then choose.
Yes.
And I got to choose between a few different teams because they all called me. It was like the Broncos, the Ravens, the Detroit, a few others. And I did my little quick research and I realized that, one, the offensive coordinator at the time for the Detroit Lions had the same agent as me. And also that same agent was my uncle's agent. So it was just like all connected. And I was like, yeah. And like I saw that the tight ends there were a little older.
Yeah.
Different play style as me. And yeah, I went there and made a splash. So I made a good choice.
Yeah. And like how quick after you choosing Lions are you in the building? Like, is it a pretty quick turnaround? Like,
it's
you're there. And
yeah,
like,
you're
let's
there.
Let's go.
Yeah, you're there.
Yeah.
Like a week later.
Oh, shit. Yeah, like it's got to be a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Pack up everything.
Get going.
Yeah. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Straight into preseason?
Oh, no. Because the draft is in what? It was April at the time. Mm-hmm. And you're reporting like a week later or something like end of April or early May. And then you're in like rookie OTAs. Mm. And then thereafter, if it goes well, the vets come in and that type of thing. And then it's like shared spring ball for a while. And then you have mini camp and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then how was all that process like during mini camp and stuff? Because obviously you're fighting for your spot.
Yeah. It was cool to like, you know, having that little chip on my shoulder and being the underdog, which was like a first for me. I always kind of had everyone in the support, everyone in my corner. I always had a belief in myself. But then that sparked even more fire within me. And I remember, I recall being like sixth, seventh, eighth tight end, because, you know, there's a bunch of guys before they refine the team and the numbers. I was seventh, eighth guy in line. I was that dude. I was like, you know, holding the bag for everyone to go, boom, getting hit, boom, getting hit, boom, getting hit. And then switching, and then boom, I do the hitting. So I'm like, I'm practicing double, you know, I'm doing the most. And then, you know, I started stringing some plays together. Started slowly going from sixth and seventh in line to fifth to fourth. And then eventually I'm like in the huddle with Calvin Johnson, and I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah. Oh, let's go. Shit, let's go, baby. And like, you know, giddy, excited. And but also I remember my approach back then was like, no one knew like my true personality when I was like doing the thing. Like no one, like I was just stone cold. I was so focused. Looking back at it, I probably should have kept that predisposition, because it benefited me totally. I was like so laser focused, and it wasn't until I actually made the team that like my teammates found out like I was actually like fucking just like I said no to going out. I said no to being social, whatever. But it wasn't until like I made the team where my teammates felt like, oh, Joe's fucking weird. Like, so it was it benefited me well, and I ended up making the team and made the most of it.
And then it was around September, week one, you go in, you're playing the Vikings, catch a touchdown and get a win.
Yeah. I ended up playing the first game. I had a few plays drawn up for me, so I knew there was a big potential that I was going to get the ball. I'll forget. It was a fade route towards like the fourth quarter. We're winning, but this is like the go ahead touchdown for us. Oh no, I think it's tied, and we're go ahead touchdown for us to take the lead and win the game basically. And we did this fade route plan, Calvin on one side, me on the other. And dude, I knew the ball was coming to me from the get. Like Stafford was just like, he gave me the look. Like he is like so subtle, but he gave me like little eyes. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And, he even may have said, here it comes, Joe. And I was like, oh, bring it. Let's go. I'm like, yeah, obviously my booty hole puckered a little bit. But, it was obviously they put a tall cornerback on me, too, at the time. But caught the ball, and I was so elated, so excited. I knew that if I was going to score, I had this plan to dance and do something after, because, you know, that's kind of my thing. And you have a chance, you have a very short form of time, especially back then, to like show maybe a little individuality. And also I'm super marketable. So I decided to just show my excitement and do a little boogie. And it ended up taking off. And then I got some touchdowns thereafter. But it was a good I've arrived moment. I might have held that I've arrived moment a little too close. That's why I got a little too comfy, but nevertheless, it was cool to have that league game, first game ever, you know, basically a game winning touchdown on a team where like it's stacked. You got Stafford, Megatron, Reggie Bush came next year, but still like that Nate Burleson, who's taking over the world right now. It was a fun experience.
And you said you got a couple more touchdowns throughout the season. You got a few more than that. You got seven throughout the season, which...
Still a record, baby.
Let's go. A record for undrafted tight end rookies.
Let's go.
Let's go. Hold on to that big blue moon. On a blue moon.
Yeah. So,
was the first year of the NFL exactly what you expected, or was it so much more?
Oh, I mean, you... Like, we talk about belief, talk about maybe expectations or anything, but yeah... I mean, I don't think I ever really got three touchdowns in my life. I mean, maybe flag football, like when I was younger, but I haven't done that in a while. I'd gotten two in college a couple times. But getting three in one game, which is also like a short list of people that have done that, even shorter list of tight ends. And
rookie undrafted. Yeah.
Born on a Truly Tuesday.
Expectations versus. I remember being quite present in the moment and enjoying it and living it, and, you know, also being like, yeah, fucking, I knew this. I manifested this. I expected this. I planned this in my book. I just knew it was going to happen. It's happening. Because I believed in myself, and I was rewarded from that belief in myself.
And you were getting, like, cult hero status with the Detroit Lions fans. Oh, yeah, too, dude. Where you're like, they were,
you know, you saw recently, how you just saw how they came up recently and how everyone was back and behind them. That city was buzzing.
Yeah.
I mean, 10 years ago when I was there, after my success, I mean, I would go around town and I get recognized. If I go back to Detroit nowadays, I won't pay for dinner or pizza. Like, I just still, like, yeah. So I remember like getting like pizza delivered to my home, and like the pizza delivery guys being like, Joseph Fourier. I'm like, yeah. They're like, you don't pay.
Yeah.
No, like, I'm gonna pay. Like, oh, here's a big tip. Just like take it. But like,
I thanks. More than you.
If that's not an I've made it moment. Like, yeah. You know, fucking free pizza. Let's go.
That's what we're here for. We're here for the free pizza.
And really, Detroit's got what, the Red Wings. They suck. Pistons. They suck. So got to get around the lines.
Right, wow. But the thing is, regardless of how they do, the Detroit faithful, like, they don't. It's so cold out there. I mean, they have great history, but there's not much else to do. Then you got to watch the sports.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then year two, you only managed 7 games, only 1 touchdown, but you decided to make a comeback to volleyball. What happened there?
This guy. So you must be referencing in a very disrespectful manner that I played volleyball on an off day, and that kind of ended my career.
Bang.
Yeah, it was a bang, a loud bone breaking bang. And yeah, that was the decline of my career. And then now that's why I do the health and wellness stuff now. So if people are sad, I can make them happy.
We do.
You seem a little sad. Is anyone? Yeah,
you may. Oh, I'm sure there's plenty of ways. We're going to do some breath work later. We'll go through that.
Yeah. You don't need a step stool for the breath work.
I did watch a few videos because you had something last night. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a few videos. Looks. We won't get into that yet. We're going to get into that soon. But that looks very, very full on, the breath work.
Yeah, it was full on.
So once that injury happened and everything goes forward, finish the season, they cut you there? Is that what happened?
Oh, how you want to know how, like, the inner workings of so cutting
coming
and
from
moving
us who have never
stuff
been,
like that. Yeah,
I've never been cut from anything. Like how does that, how do you process that internally?
The better form of your question. There you go. You're getting better. We're learning, young buck. You're learning. So the process thereafter, it's the wild, wild west. Again, it's just one of those things where it's really hard to emulate from any other sort of job because you uproot your life immediately and you get comfortable with the city and you fall in love with the city. Like, Detroit was a great place to live and the people treated me super well. And then you have expectations for yourself. But like Tom pointed out, I made my bed and I slept in it. So after that, I had to accept that being in the Detroit, I wasn't the same player. And I kind of had some bad blood for how I handled my own career and then tried to come back from it. And also a new coach. So I had 2 different coaches. One, when I had success. And 2, the second one coach, all he knew me as that guy that got hurt off the field.
Yeah.
So thereafter was getting cut and then the next day going to Arizona and going there, living in a hotel for about a month until I was like, okay, I think I can play here for a while. And as soon as I rented a place and signed a year lease. A week later, I tear my knee in practice. So then they said they were going to keep me, but then they put me on injured reserve. So that element is basically they just pay you a one-time payment to like let go of your rights, and then you're basically a free agent again, but you got to heal. So I had a mid-season knee injury and came back from that. You know, usually the recovery time is like 8 weeks if you're a running back or 12 weeks if you're an offensive lineman. So like 10, 11 weeks for me. But I was like, no, I got to come back sooner. So came back around 8 weeks. And around that time is when Bill Belichick called me out of the blue. And he's like, Joseph. I'm like, yeah, who is this? He's like, it's Bill Belichick. I'm like, yeah, right. He's like, no, really. I was like, oh, shit. Hey, coach. How you doing? And he was talking about it. It's funny being on the other side of the phone with Bill Belichick. hearing that he wants Dude on the playing the Patriots, it's like, dude, yes, coach, yes, I would love to be part of your team. And da, 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 da. He's like, whatever you do, don't come back too soon. I was like, yes, sir. And what did I do? I came back too soon. And when I arrived in the Patriots facility, I was still kind of having a little limp that I tried not to let them see. Was trying to make practice work, but I wasn't right at that time. So I spent like 3 or 4 weeks there, and then they ended up cutting me. From that moment, I was like staying at a hotel again. I actually had some family there, which was nice. My uncle was still living there. And thereafter, I basically, towards the end, was figuring out if I should finish the season, because like week 14 or something like that. So there's only 2 weeks left, and like my knee's not right. But I had a tryout with the Chiefs, and then I had to go to the, I went to the, I got a tryout with the Rams, and the Rams were ready. I went to the Chiefs, was barely getting the routes right. I mean, like, just the knee wasn't good, and they could tell. And then I went to the Rams, and they actually didn't actually make me try out. They were just giving me a spot, and then would have the futures contract, which was great, because the next year would have been in LA. But in that moment, I was like, hey, I have 2 weeks to freaking suffer. And by that time, practice squad money was like not good money to me, because I had made the big bucks. And I was like, ah, I don't need to do that for that money. And I was like, yeah, fool of myself. Thought I had arrived. So I said no to the Rams opportunity. And I rarely tell this story, because it's one of those moments where I had my own future slip through my fingers. I said no to an opportunity. And I'll never forget that. It's one of those things where it's hard to forgive myself for that, because in that moment I believe, because the inner workings of the football world is very small. It's a club, and just like gossipy girls, dudes are always talking, especially coaches are on their phone texting, and the word gets around really fast. So I think definitely word got around that, one, I'm this guy that got hurt off the field, and two, I said no to an opportunity. And looking back at it, I regret it. But then again, my ankle's never been the same. I ended up having it to surgery later on that I said no to. So it's something of a not only difficult, but a story of which every person's journey, every guy's journey through the NFL is different. And even thereafter, like, every person's journey leaving is different. And mine happened to be colorful, to say the least. But then again, the splash I made beforehand, because for the longest time I had to deal with thinking of myself as a failure, and, you know, struggling with identity, and, you know, what am I here for if I'm not playing football? And I look back at it now knowing, one, I made it. Mm-hmm. Two, I scored. At one time I scored 3 in 1 game, made a splash, and
record holder, baby.
On a Tuesday, blue moon. And now I look at it having a lot more respect for myself and how it all went down. And, you know, I give myself a break, because I'm still part of the 0.01% of the populations that's reached that mountaintop. So even though if people try and bring me down, I got a big view from up top here.
It's a long way down, and unfortunately.
Mate, you couldn't have segued more perfectly into, I think we're going to chat about life post-football now. And I just want to, like, do you feel like that journey and the end of your journey in the football world has informed the path your life's taken now? You're in the sort of, as you alluded to, you're in, like, the wellness space. You're doing a lot of breath work. Do you think that, like, informed the path that you've taken now?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a great question, because it is a fun segue to go from the NFL to the hippie world.
Yeah. It's like just totally different worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, if you haven't noticed, the Michigan quarterback that just won the national championship, he was all pro breath work, meditation, mindfulness.
Yeah.
So that was good for, you know, the marketing for for my business now.
Good for the brand.
The brand. Yeah. Good for the brand. Because this is a very emerging type of thing. Obviously, it's been around for thousands of years. Yogic breathing. The Egyptians did it. The Mayans did it. if you fall into a YouTube rabbit hole like I have, I believe that Jesus has done it too. All right. Meditation, breath work, or prayer, whatever you want to call it. I think he was, there was when he was in that valley for 40 days and 40 nights not eating. I mean, he had to have been breathing, doing something crazy. So I look at it now and I realize there is a connection. And I had this blind spot when I started breath work, because I started breath work because I needed to. It helped me with, you know, the meditation, the yoga, the breath work. It all really, really helped me. And I had this blind spot. Well, only now, like, I realized, oh, this is great for athletes. Because what's the main thing for recovery, for healing, is oxygen. You know, you need more oxygen you get, the quicker you recover. So that fundamental fact is super beneficial to be able to spread this with athletes, you know, men and women. I've guided breathwork classes with 9-year-olds all the way to 75-year-olds. And it's always, you know, with belief and certain, you know, type of, you know, good effort, it always yields a very profound result, whether it be just being energized or feeling better or, you know, shedding a few tears, whatever it may be, it's good for you. And it's one of those things where yoga, where that was 15, 20 years ago, as it was growing, and now it's yoga on every corner, and yoga pants, love those. Now I believe that this trend of breath work, even though I've been in this myself personally for 5-6 years, it's trendy, it's growing, and I think I'm one of the spreaders of the good news that this is something that is, that everyone should have some sort of tool in their tool belt, and this could be benefit everyone, because we all do it. It isn't until like 5 or 6 years old where we start wearing belts, hunching over our desks, where we breathe improperly or not optimally. And then maybe 12, 13, 14 years old, we're like, you know, again, you're getting the hair on your pubes and, you know, you start getting hormones.
Some of us are getting taller. Yeah, some of us
are taller. Voice is getting deeper and those type of things. So when you're attracted to the opposite sex, you start breathing improperly, not breathing into your belly, girls and boys. So you breathe into your chest and you breathe not optimally and you breathe the incorrect way. That's a stressor response, an adrenaline response. So just reminding people that there's a better way to kind of control what we think is automatic. And it could be a tool for people to use to, you know, combat the chaos that we are dealing with every day, from our phones, from news, from just all the things around us. And for our environment can affect us. If we can take control of ourselves, we can then, you know, lend for a better environment.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, can you like give us a bit of an idea of your brand specifically and like what
where can we find
you? What have you gotten into and like what's
let's plug. Let's market.
plug. But then what's brought you here to Australia and that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So one, you guys should I have 2 more classes coming up. You guys should come. I'll send you the link, send you the info if you guys want to come through. Geelong?
Geelong, down my way.
All right, we got a few spots left.
We'll put it on our box.
Yeah, perfect. And then I'm doing a morning thing on Wednesday, and then I got a couple more classes if you guys want to come through.
Cool.
But I came here. Always wanted to come here. I actually had booked a flight coming down here for the Australian Open.
Yes.
Which is just a couple weeks ago.
Just finished up.
Right. So 2020, when everything was on fire, I had a ticket to come here. So I canceled that. So I didn't have a twinkle in my eye to come here for a long time.
Yep.
But I didn't know anybody really back then. Now I've made connections through Bali and other points of my travel where Australians, as kind as you are, were like, hey, come on, mate, come down to Anaconda and do some breath work.
Hey, that was pretty good.
How you going? How you going? I didn't come here to fuck spiders. I was invited kindly by a few people that were like, hey, there's a community here in Sydney and Melbourne and Tassie and Gold Coast, Byron Bay. There's a ton of hippies. Mm. So I'm like, I would love to come down here, because right now, at this point in my life, I've done the eat, pray, love. I've experienced, I've seen crazy shit. I've seen amazing experience, amazing people and cultures and all that stuff. But I'm kind of done just doing that for me. I have this thing now that I can share. So right now if I'm not traveling and guiding breathwork, then I'm not traveling. So I have to have a reason to be there beyond just saying, I want to see this mountain or this thing take this picture for Instagram. Like, no. I have this thing that I want to spread because I know it's medicine and it can help people. And it's beyond language. It's beyond culture. It's beyond shape, size, or gender, or sex. It's beyond all of it. It's beyond all of it. It's universal. And we all do it. Like I said, I've guided breath work respiration to a bunch of French dudes playing football. And did that. I've guided people that spoke no English in Japan. Like, I just point to my nose, I point to my mouth, I point to my belly. And I show them how to do it. Boom, we're in there. It's beautiful how it's received from whatever background you come from. And that also comes across because I'm not the hippie chick talking about chakras on my guitar, singing Kumbaya. Which I love, by the way.
Which
I love, man. I love it. Cacao centers me and all that stuff. I love that stuff. However, I'm still a bro. I'm still a dude. I still love locker room talk, as you guys can tell. I love busting balls. But then again, I was also raised by women. I love the nurturing element that this gives. I know that this healed me, helped me. So I want people to have that healing factor for them. And, you know, also, any interaction I have, I always want people to feel better having met me. I think that kind of ripples to the effect of the positive shift of the world, because there's a lot of shit going on, a lot of chaos. Mm. So if I'm able to package this to be received by not only women that are into this stuff, because they have a more inclination for that type of stuff, to men, their first time, or athletes, or skeptics. Like, I love when skeptics are having a full-on, like, you know, massive activation and breath work where they're just letting it all out. Like, that type of thing is what I'm here for, because I know there's a responsibility to me being in this stature in this space. If I walk into a room, people look. If I speak, people listen. So I have to deliver some good news. And I think I'm relatable. I think people can resonate with me because I've gone through the fire. I've come out brighter. And I've reached the mountaintop of the NFL and gotten to a point where I could package this in a way that it's received quite well. And it works out good. That's why I'm here in Australia, to share it.
I know that it's taking you to, if you look on your socials, I think you put up a post, it was 20 or 30,000 kilometers last year on a plane. Like, that's insane. Like, bring it back to athletes. Do you think, you said JJ from Michigan is kind of into that space? Mm-hmm. Could the NFL, is there a space for this in the NFL?
Yes, it's already happening.
It is it?
It's already happening. I have some friends that are breathwork facilitators that have gotten with the 49ers, the Duke basketball team. I'm doing some sessions when I go back to LA with some high school football teams. I've also worked with the Chargers, did some breathwork for breast cancer awareness, and like two or three players came by and checked it out. And there's definitely potential with it. And I do believe it'll become, you're going to hear more about it throughout the years. And I hope to be part of that catapult and nice attachment to the name. Guys like Wim Hof have expanded expanded on the whole understanding of, not only understanding of it, but people's, its reach and to people. And that's how I started. And like I said, it's just getting it to a way that it's receivable and getting people related to it, that it's something that you could do on your own that's super beneficial. And it doesn't need to be, one, it's free access at all times. You can do it whenever you want. So I do see it already taking a high left, as you called it?
up into the left.
Up into the left. It's going up into the left right now. And I hope to be part of that rise. And I mentioned the blind spot earlier, but now it's like a bright spot to get this for young men and women, athletes, like all types, but especially athletes, because it doesn't just benefit, which is mostly my business to talk about the woo-woo hippies, like mental, spiritual benefits. There is amazing physiological benefits. You're rewiring through awesome neurotransmitters that are produced in your gut. I can get really scientific for you, but you know, your frontal brain, your ego, all that stuff. There's maybe a song on repeat. Let's just call it that. A song on repeat. It's been playing over and over again that maybe hasn't served you so well. You get to a point where, you know, why are you feeling heavy or irritable or that type of thing? And maybe meditation or yoga might help, but breath work is, for me, it's a very tangible, okay, this works. So I've developed an unwavering confidence with it, and guiding to the point of the last few years, you know, developed an unconscious competence to like getting the point across, like this works. If you just breathe in a rhythmic fashion for a few minutes, it'll be a catalyst for change. So then you can just play a new song in your head.
Yeah, right.
Deep. It's good, but like it's absolutely hitting home. So with all of that in mind, like what's your plans moving forward, like future wise? Like what's your next big step? What's your next big dream?
I got a few. I have a few ideas. Without revealing too much. Without having you guys sign an NDA.
Yeah.
I have a few ideas for TV show. Would love to host some of that back in some point of my career.
Yep.
Cool, like something that like that. More retreats, more reach. I don't want to be the guru or the shaman or the Tony Robbins, but I'd love to be a representation of the magic that this modality shares and gives to people. And I think I'm a big messenger. I'm a big walking billboard. And also I'm a testament to that it works, because there was a really dark period when football was over that this shit saved my life. And over the last year, I've got reaffirmed and confirmed by people having shared that same sentiment to me. It's hard not to feel good when someone says, you've changed my life. Mm. You get that little God complex. Yeah. You're like, shit, yeah. It's also fulfilling, but also like it can be dangerous to drink from that nectar. But removing the ego or partnering with the ego in a way so you receive that and know that it's just a reflection of the magic it has. The people have uttered the words, this changed my life. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't not hear that and not continue and not believe in it deeper and want to share it more. And my love for travel has been paired beautifully with breathwork, because I've planted seeds throughout in Bali and other places where other people that are nomadic or in other places of the world are like, hey, can you share this with my community? Can you share this with my community? And right now I'm really leaning in towards the events, being in person. I think the magic is the connection in person. But soon thereafter, I think this is going to be taking off to the point where it's up to the left so high that, you know, even myself, I got to pinch myself a little bit, because I know this is my first time, my year really booking anything round trip. I've only done like one way flights for the last 3 years of this nomadic existence I've had. But it's shaping up to be very purposeful for wherever I go. And like I said, I've rubbed elbows with the celebrities, been on yachts with billionaires. I also can go to Resi and talk to the kiddos, don't matter where the background is, if it's rough or if it was easy. I can speak the language. I'm a chameleon of sorts. I was raised by a village. If you go to my holiday party, everyone looks different. And I grew up with sport, and that gave me friends that looked all different shapes, colors, and sizes, different backgrounds. So when it comes to that, especially coming from where I'm from, LA, it's just a big melting pot of culture. And coming from that, I believe to myself to be the best messenger for this, one of the best. And also authentically relating to people, because this stuff helped me. And I think people can feel that when they receive it. And if you guys are keen to receive it, you'll know if you guys come to a class. But it's one of those things where it's undeniable. And in every class I do, I'm confirmed. And last night, like, I have a little sore voice and a sore body because there was just a lot of energy being released and a lot of healing going on. And that's the thing. A lot of us need healing. Yes, everyone should be going to therapy, but if you can't afford therapy, you can afford to breathe.
It's a pretty important part of life, breathing.
Just a quick one before me, like probably my last touch on this, but and it might warm your heart a little bit, but at work the other day, there's 10, 12 of us, all guys sitting around the table at work, and one of the guys was telling us how every morning he wakes up, does a bit of meditation, and does breath work. So it's getting out there. Like, I think, like, I don't know if there's a stigma or anything like that. It's going. So that might warm your heart a little bit. So shout out to Veery. Veery, legend.
Invite Veery to my class. Send him the link.
Hey, I'm going to let him know.
Yeah.
I will let him know. So off the back of that, where do you see, like, because you're so well traveled, where are you seeing, like, the biggest, I suppose, explosions in growth of this sort of practice? Would you say practice? Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
I guess, yeah. Where are you seeing, like, is there a particular country where it's like, wow, they are just, they're all in on this breathwork, or is it?
I think here's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Australia because one, it was confirmed that you guys actually do have culture. It's not just mullets and mustaches.
there's a bit of that too.
I was in Manly Beach in Sydney and I did a sunrise yoga and everyone was active. There's a volleyball game going. There was a group of 100 people swimming, a couple people meditating, nice dog walks, old men and women holding hands, walking down the street. And I'm like, is it 11 a.m. or no, it's 6 a.m. And people are just enjoying the time of which, like, and also doing things at play and you know, taking care of themselves. And like, maybe where I'm from in L.A., it's more so trendy to be in wellness. A lot of ego involved. You know, L.A. is a land of big dreams, so there's a little narcissism here and there. And, you know, I'm no stranger to it. I love looking at myself in the mirror. But I notice it more here as part of a routine, part of a discipline. And I'm sure that's still prevalent in L.A., but less, it's more spread out. And here it's more, you know, I think it's more prevalent, more of a thing. And I appreciated that more than ever. Coffee's good. Asian food is dope here. Like I said, it's a good spot. It's a good spot. And I see it as a good spot here. I mean, there's little pockets everywhere. I mean, Bali was definitely a place where it's extremely growing. And that's the beautiful part about that. Everyone's a life coach there. Yeah. But everyone that came to the class, it grew and it had branches that formed internationally, which was really nice. And that's actually how I've benefited of being coming here, because two of the men that and women that came, two men and a couple girls that came to my class were from Australia, and they planted the seed of coming to Sydney, coming to here in Melbourne, and then going to Tassie and doing this and sharing this. So I'm eternally grateful for a place like Bali. But yeah, it's like I said, it's still new, still growing, going up to the left. it's definitely, there's pockets everywhere. So if anywhere, I'd say like, yeah, around here, I've had benefit really well.
Sounds to me like you'll be back.
I'm confident.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Nah, awesome. Very good.
Before, I got one more question for you, but can't thank you enough for your time and coming in and speaking with us about this, even though I
and sharing so much, even though Tom's trying to fucking
trying to
take you down.
You guys, I mean, I can answer a couple football questions if you want.
Well, the first thing I wanted, where can we find you? Where the people that are interested in getting involved in this, where do we find your brand?
Oh, yeah, well, name's Big Joe, same name on Instagram, BIGJOE. And then I have a website, heybigjoe.com. But
could you have something Costa Rica and Canada
I'm throwing a few retreats this year, one in Costa Rica, one in Mexico. I'll be all over the place. I have my events on there. If breathwork, you're curious about it, it's my favorite thing to talk about. So reach out, that would be cool. But yeah, I'm all over the place. I'll definitely be back here. Be back here. But I got a few spots. I'm going to Hawaii for breathwork. I'm going to Colombia for breathwork. I'm going to St. Bart's for breathwork. I'm going to Bali in April for breathwork.
Sounds to me like breathwork loves the nice weather.
Yeah. I'm chasing the sun. You know how good I feel right now seeing all my friends' videos?
Mate,
I mean, granted, it's rainy here right
it's
now.
It's not the best day here.
Right,
but
this whole week's been super sunny.
Yeah.
And I get to see people in L.A. They really struggle with rain in L.A.
Yeah.
So seeing everyone's stories on the rain in L.A. right now versus like the weather that's been here the last week, I'm like, chasing summer. If I got sand between my toes and I'm sun on my face, I'm a happy boy.
Yep. Love it.
So moving, you said you're going to answer a couple of football questions. We've got to ask, big week coming up for, you know, the NFL Super Bowl coming up. What's your thoughts on that? The Chiefs 49ers, got any hot takes?
Yeah. I mean, my hottest take is I can't wait to see Kittle and Kelsey. So good. Two of the best to do it. Go at it. That's great. It's really hard for me to bet against Andy Reid and Mahomes. However, I love an underdog story with Purdy, and also from California. I bet against the Chiefs last time, and I was right. So I think this time, I don't think they're going to lose again. I don't think they're going to get all that way and lose. So I'll go for the Chiefs and Kelsey. Kelsey, I mean, we came up at the same time, and I'll never forget, like, after my record-breaking rookie year.
Hell yeah.
It's funny because that was the one year he had an injury. He didn't play his rookie year much at all, I don't think. And we were at the Super Bowl in Arizona that year, thereafter. And I was, you know, riding high. I had a bunch of, you know, paid appearances. It was good. It was good for Joe that year. Really good good financial year for Big Joe. I'll never forget, we're at this party in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Travis comes up to me, and he's like, he remembered me, I remembered him, we dapped each other up, because, you know, the football world's small, the tight end football world's even smaller.
Yeah.
And he's like, I was like, dude, da-da-da, like, he got drafted above me, but I had the success at that point. He hadn't had it yet, but he was primed, apparently. And I'll never forget, he's like, Joe, Big Joe, I see that you're doing touchdown dances, man, I want to do what you're doing. I'm like, yeah, you'll get there one day, bro. You'll get there one day, bro. But lo and behold, fast forward 10 years, he's literally the best to do it. And it was a cool little fun tidbit. And we've had some run-ins here and there over the years. You know, not saying anything about him and T-Swift, but him as an actual football player, the proof's in the pudding, man. He's Mount Rushmore or the top to ever do it, best to ever do it. You know, you can make a couple cases for Gronkowski and a few others, but definitely one of the best to do it. Hall of Famer for sure.
Oh yeah.
And do you still have because the Lions got relatively far this year, like, you know, like you said, it was like a great year for them. You saw the whole city get behind them. Were you also slightly rooting for the Lions going into the game when they're playing the 49ers?
Yeah, of course. Detroit is in my heart forever. I bleed that Honolulu blue. I could play for the Cardinals, play for the Patriots, but if I have any sort of semblance of being proud of the team that I play for, I would love to end up one day going back there and receiving some love if they're keen. It'd be so good. But yeah, of course. It was so good. And also, I've been a fan of Dan Campbell. Like, I knew about him when he was actually playing. Mm. And he was, getting for his first coaching gigs was actually when I was coming up. So I spoke to him on the phone about playing for the Dolphins at the time, just maybe, a little bit. I remember coming to the Combine and talking to him. So seeing his success, I'm not surprised at all. And he, you know, he backed up what he was putting out there. Yeah. And, it was so good for the city. And also, the whole world was kind of rooting for him.
They
were the Cinderella story.
Yeah,
so, yeah, man. I actually, the only thing I'm upset with is how they treated Stafford. That shit pissed me off a lot.
In the game, you mean?
Well, before, there was a lot of, publicity about, don't wear a Stafford jersey.
Yeah, and wasn't there something with they booed his him? Wife and kids were on the... Were they on the ground before they played?
Yeah, there was a lot of booing and maybe stuff.
That's what I'm saying. The booing and stuff.
Yeah.
What that guy did for Detroit is a legend. And he should be. He should have been treated as such. Sure, I mean, they were just probably a little salty because he actually won somewhere else. But that, at that time, was a testament to what that organization was doing at that time without Dan Campbell and the new GM. So when it came down to, him being booed, I was like, you guys were in the huddle. You guys weren't in the huddle when I saw him getting literally tackled through the earth and coming up, not being able to breathe and still say the next play, call the play in the huddle, barely, at a very high voice, and then run the next play like he's a warrior, he's a gladiator. And so when he had the success of making the NFL and winning that game, I was like, not surprised.
Yeah. Last one from me, two-parted question. Are you going to be able to watch the game on Monday or Sunday, or are you going to be off flying to somewhere else?
I'll be in Tassie, so I'll be watching it there. Oh, nice. They're watching it there in the morning. If not, I might hopefully closing a deal on an appearance here. I might even fly first thing in the morning from Tassie back to Melbourne just to show my face for a couple Aussie dollars and get the hell out.
Beautiful. Yeah. And my last one, what's it like dapping up with Megatron? Absolute legend of the game, and you got to stand side by side.
Well, that's, taking it back to 10 years ago when I was undrafted trying to make the team, I had not really understood, if I was going to get there, even though I was playing with the first team, there was still, they had to move and shuffle some people, for me to be, the third tight end or one of the guys. And I really knew I was going to make it when Calvin Johnson kept dapping me up, because I was making a lot of plays. If he wasn't catching the ball, or Nate Burleson wasn't catching the ball, I was catching all the balls. Like, I was catching them touchdowns. I was mossing, you know, 10-year veterans. I was just getting all getting all the action. And then eventually, like, all those dap ups turned into, like, oh, let's have our own handshake. I was like, okay. So, like, if I see Calvin in his day, like, we'll do the same handshake. And I was like, oh, I'm gonna make this. Yeah. they're not gonna cut a guy that has a handshake with him. And he must have a little say. No, but like, one of those things where I'd catch a ball, and the first thing I would see when I was coming up from, like, falling on the ground or something, was this 81 big dude, like, rushing me and giving me a big hug, dapping me. I'm like, that's what you, hey, let's go, Big Joe, let's go. Yeah. Oh, okay. Shit.
Okay, I'm good. I think I'm just doing my best. Oh, mate, that's amazing.
That's huge. Done. Beautiful,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for coming on. Cooking in here, so
yeah it's musky. Australian BO.
All the best with everything going forward, mate. Thank you. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Absolutely loved it. Love the energy, man. And if anyone wants to do the breath work, get on board, Big Joe.
Yeah.
Can't thank you enough, mate. Thank you for being so generous.
Cheers, boys. Thank you.
Legend.
Yes.